Roland Coeur.
Well, first of all, I do think that. I do think that that is a contributor. I think most people who know much about the priesthood and the behavior of those men would say that is one of the saddest corruptions of all, the preying on young boys, the what happens among priests. And then, you know, if you read anything about popery, the former popes that had multiple children from multiple women. So you have immorality is probably the thing to say is most prominent with the denial of things that are natural to a man in a good way. They get perverted in a perverse religion. Catholicism doesn't have Christianity in it, doesn't have the power of God in it. It's just religious. And so, yeah, I do think that's an unfortunate effect. And then you have men who may try to find sanctuary in a place like that, even trying to run from their own identity, end up putting themselves in positions that actually exacerbate their perversity, their depravity. Yeah.
Thank you, Harry. Yeah, Tom, go ahead.
Yeah, that is a really
just real quick for the record. So the tension between sharing ministry burdens, struggles with your wife, and be putting a governor on there and not wanting to overburden her, discourage her. How do we balance that?
And that is a really good question, very relevant question and application. Some reflections. Number one is, and Karen will be able to testify to this, things that happen among the elders are private to the elders. There's an assumed confidentiality in eldership, and there should be. So I don't subscribe to, nor do I support, the idea that if you tell me, I need to tell my wife. Because she's not there, she's not contextually able to engage, and it's done in an environment that should be confidential unless agreed upon. Hey, we can share this with our spouse. So she knows that. She knows not to ask questions, even if she's curious. I might come home burdened, but I'm not at liberty to talk about those things. So that's number one. Number two, I would say that she's not as weak as you might think. You know, you want to protect her from things that maybe she's needing to be a part of partnering with you in. So I wouldn't make the assumption that this is going to harm her inherently. I do think on the other side, there are things that are not helpful for her to know, especially as those things relate to me and people's comments about me. Okay, I would always try, and I'm giving you just my approach to this, I would always try to shield her from hearing things. She's my greatest fan and supporter. It's like hurting her children. You know, she might hurt me, but nobody else can. And so I would potentially, if someone has made a critical statement about me, it's not uncommon for me to protect her from that so I don't bias her to the church that I want her to love like I love. And so I would make that judgment call. So I would share, believing she can handle more and I need her support, praying through things. Two, I don't share what I'm not allowed to share. And thirdly, I want her to love the church that I love. And sometimes I will just not tell her simply because I want to protect her from that and the bias that would inherently go with that. A lot of the things that happen, I mean, she can tell you, and it's certainly a challenge for me as I come home from a long day of talking. And she wants me to talk some more. and I've used up my word count. And so it's, but she's my partner, you know, so I'm in a fix because she's made to share and she can't share if she doesn't know. And I might need a little bit of breathing room to recover, but I'm committed to sharing as much as I can share about my day, about what happened. And, you know, she wants to know. And I will say, wives, that's what should be in your heart. And husbands, that's what you should try to facilitate, is sharing. What happened, how it happened, where it happened, elements about it. Allow her to share my life, and she wasn't present at those transactions. Last thing I would say is it's immensely beneficial if she can share ministry with you. Like, it'll be wonderful to not travel home from Jackson to try to explain what happened in Jackson, because she shared it. So we can share it, and we can talk about it in ways that are much more enjoyable because we lived it together. Both the scenery that you have, the people that we met. She got to meet some of you gals, which I only got to see you, but she got to talk to some of you, and I'll benefit from that. And she'll benefit from some of the men that I got to talk to. So there's sharing and partnering in that way. I don't want to hurt her. I certainly don't want to burden her. But she's built to be burdened. She is. So it's. She can't be my partner if she can't know what she needs to know. And if I'm carrying around a load and my head is down and I can't seem to smile, and, you know, if I can tell her, I need to tell her. And at the end, it's two people taking that burden to whom? The Lord. It's not two people carrying that burden. It's two people carrying that burden to the one who's going to carry that burden. And that way it allows her and us to share the wonder of God working on our behalf. God providing, God supplying, God overcoming, God protecting. So that's my response to a very good question, and I hope that's helpful.
Harry, sometimes in a smaller church, as you know, which most of us are involved in, if not all of us, our wives, confidentiality is tricky because you're all stuffed in a small space together.
Yeah, she probably
it's
knows.
Inevitable.
Yeah.
How would you shepherd us to handle that, to shepherd our wives when they do know what's going on? And it is, they do see the controversy going on, just things to think about as couples.
Yeah, that's fair, and it's a good question. I think what you would hear me say is the convictional commitment that what gets shared in confidential spaces like elder meetings needs to stay there. So we don't ever argue about that. All I have to do is say, honey, I can't talk about that. That's respected, and that's just what I have to do. I have to have integrity, and I'll tell you, if I lose trust with my leaders, I lose trust. And so if I lose trust, I don't have any influence. So if they're telling me something that I know, and I was a part of a conversation that was nuanced, and opinions were made, and I might offer an opinion, a representation of somebody's point of view or words, and since I don't have a impeccable memory or omniscience, I could misrepresent that. And so then they're bothered by or impacted by what I have represented. And I'm not doing that. I can't do that. She understands that. It's a conviction we share. She'll ask until I say, honey, I can't talk about that. I can't mention those names. Something has happened. I'm not at liberty to talk about it. It's a respect that we share. That's important. If she happens to know, hey, does it involve X? Yeah, it does involve X. What do you know about X? She'll tell me what she knows about X. I will then decide whether I join in to help shape in a good way, and hopefully an edifying way, a wise way, whatever she perceives. And if I can't, then I'll go back to the group of guys that I have a covenant with to be quiet and say, listen, I need the freedom to talk to Karen about this. She knows I need to shepherd her, and I can't do that without you releasing me. So that's what I would. I just will say to you, when you lose trust, you lose leadership. And if people expect you to guard your tongue, you need to guard it. And I would say to the wives, you're going to be privy to things that you have to guard. Because if they believe you heard it because they said it, your husband, you erode the very trust that he's trying to protect. And most people will assume that she knows. And it helps me when they find out she doesn't know. And it's much better to be protective of what you share than maybe too liberal with what you share. So I don't know if that answered it, but that's what I would say to that.
Yeah, thank you. Tricky situations.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's no and if you fail, you fail. Own it. Yeah, I mean, I certainly have failed the very principles I just said. I am so sorry. Something slipped out. It shouldn't have slipped out. Because who, you know, a multitude of words, they're what? One if not sin. So you talk a lot, you're inherently going to have trouble. And when you get in trouble, own it. I owned it. I did it. I'm sorry. Please forgive. I might, but at least I owned it.
Other questions related to that? How would you shepherd us to build unity with, so leadership teams, elders in training, whatever. Some of us in here don't have elders yet in our churches. But to build unity with couples, because sometimes we find Satan would like to drive a wedge, you know, maybe between two wives. And that can affect... Yeah. You know, our husbands, we're one, but we have a husband might have unity with a husband, but not a wife with a wife. How, help us out
there.
Yeah,
that's reality, right? There's personalities that have chemistry. Sorry, I keep looking at that direction as if you don't matter. I'm sorry. We all understand relational chemistry. It's a wonderful thing when the husband get along and the wife get along and you can't wait to hang out together. And that's a treasure, and you ought to cultivate it, protect it, and keep it. But often that's not the case. You know, there's just camaraderie with some and on either side. What I would propose as a potential pursuit, priority, productive path to take is to begin to have intentional interactions with the idea that I, because of our relationship at the church or because of our relationship in leadership, want to proactively get to know you. And get to know you. Get to know where you're from. Get to know what you like. Get to know you in a way that'll foster relational trust and camaraderie. We are different. I'm a motor person. I like cars and things that make noise. And I think electric cars have no soul. And that's me. And some of you are hunters. And I have guns, but I don't like to kill things. Would I if I needed to eat it? Yes. But would I just go out to shoot it, to hang it? I wouldn't. I might have lost all the credibility I had.
Love covers a multitude of sins.
Thank you. But the point of that is that we don't have to be the same to have a relationship. What we have in common the most is enough to have a relationship. We love God. We love the Son of God. We love the people of God. We care about the mission and glory of God. That's a lot of substance to unite around. So the fact that you like red and I like green, you like to hunt and I like to go fast, shouldn't keep us from being brothers or brothers and sisters. And as a couple, intentionally working to build relationships. Some people come out of homes where it wasn't natural to share anything, or some talk too much. They share everything. It's okay. You have to love. Love covers a multitude of sins. And love is an intentional action for somebody else's benefit. And I would argue you ought to be proactive in that. And I think as it relates to cultivating the values we talked about today, finding trustworthy couples that you can have a regular ongoing rhythm with and share things with and say, listen, Karen and I are stuck. She wants a dog. I have no interest. She wants another cat. I don't want to do that. He wants to buy another car. He has one. We're stuck. Can you help us? And having relationships that can say, Harry, what are you doing? Eric and Leslie saying to Harry and Karen, you know what? I'm not thinking that's a good idea. It's helpful to Harry because I always like my ideas. And so it's a tool, relational tool, two or three couples having relationship, building trust, so that when it really matters, you have allies, objective allies. I'm subjective. I see it my way. If it's evil, I would want to know it. But if it's not evil, I believe if I like it, I can potentially do it. Karen might think differently. She's subjective. Having couples objective who love us is immensely valuable to us. And I would cultivate that. It's not perfect. People aren't perfect. But I think that's a valuable asset. Objectivity, multitude of counselors, there's benefit. So I would pursue it.
Thank you. Very helpful. Other questions? Casey, go ahead.
Like if you have infidelity in marriage and you're counseling, do you usually bring in your wife or another lady over the years, or do you do that yourself?
The initial experience is typically just me.
Okay.
You know, they're coming in. I don't know what's coming. Hey, Pastor Harry, we need to tell you something. And it's raw and it's real and it's hard. So after that initial experience, then it's a decision of what do I need, okay? Certainly if the wife has been betrayed, she's going to need support. So I'll reach out to a trusted ally, maybe Karen, if I think she's available or kind of tuned to that, but I typically have more than one option. And I will reach out to that option and connect this person, the female, to that person. The husband, I'll start with and also draft somebody to help me because I'm a pastor. I call myself an ER doctor. I can't do rehab. I do crisis. I do ER. Sometimes I do surgery, but I can't do rehab and the long walk home. And when there's lots of trauma and difficulty, you're going to need people who can take a long walk, not a short one. What I do is essential and critical, but it's not enough where there's betrayal. So I will draft allies, develop the path, the accountability. In my role as a pastor, I'll check in periodically. So if it's initially, we might meet weekly. How's it going? Where are we at? You know, working on if it's fidelity, is it infidelity rather? Is it long-lived? Is it a one-time or a few times? Is it years? What's the gravity of it? Who is it? There's all kinds of nuances to how impactful and hurtful. It's always hurtful. It's catastrophic. But how deeply and damaging it is involves factors. So it would be assessing and then creating a pathway to walk them home to healing. And then typically there's always the issue, are we going to stay together? So that's important to coach them because I would prefer, if possible, they stay together. I would. That's my hope. I'm going to coach to that, but it's not always possible, especially if it's got certain repetitiveness to it, hard-heartedness to it. You know, I'm not going to make her or him stay with that, but I would like them to think about that and the ability of the gospel to bring healing in that because I've seen it. I mean, I could introduce you to couples, you'd say no way they would have survived this level of betrayal. And there they are. There they are. They carry pain, but they also have enjoyed dramatic healing. In some cases, that doesn't happen. So yeah, I use allies. And I will never counsel a woman who's been betrayed like that by myself. Yeah. After that initial exposure, because she's hurting, she's needy, and I'm an illusion. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm the faithful guy. I'm the good man. I'm the thing she got denied. And I don't want that infatuation to occur without accountability and protection for her and for me.
And like the elders, would the elders know or not know, or what would they know? Would you just be like maybe just general with them? Like there's some marriage issues.
Yeah, I wouldn't communicate something instantly just because the guy has an elder. Yeah. Number one, that couple is already struggling with shame, embarrassment, and all the consequences of what has just happened. And I'd love to tell them, listen, I'm the only person who knows about this right now, and the two people I'm going to draft to help us. Okay. It may be necessary for others to know, but it'll only be as they need to know.
Yeah.
So it's about protecting them. It's hard for couples who fumble the ball in that way to stay in a church any length of time because it's just hard.
Yeah.
But ideally, that's where they need to stay. So you're trying to make it possible, safe enough, secure enough, so that they can heal in the context of that biblical community. And sometimes people not knowing, they know they have a problem, they know they're working through stuff, but they don't know the rest of it.
So it's like more wisdom on how it's going to help them repair their marriage.
Yes,
grow,
correct.
And kind of going, step by step and then making wisdom decisions.
Yeah, and if I'm at the next elders meeting, I'm not bringing that up unless, hey, we're aware of something happening with Harry and Karen. And I let them explain what they know, and then I'll make a judgment call as to what else they need to know. In the spirit of protecting that couple, but recognizing I'm dealing with elders in the church who are also shepherding those people that are affected by that couple. And I like to say this, knowledge is my friend as a leader. I may never use it, but it helps me to know it. And so I would prefer to know it as soon as you can tell it so that I can share, because you don't know what I know. And I may know things you don't know I know, and you're helping that couple. But if I knew, I could help that couple too. So,
related to that, how do you answer maybe a concern where individuals in the flock are saying, hey, I found out so-and-so leader, elder, knows about my situation. You gossiped to that other leader.
Yeah.
When in fact it was what you just described.
Yeah, and I would tell them. And I tell them right up front. I mean, just to be clear, at the very beginning, when I'm dealing with that couple, I'm going to do my very best to protect what you would want me to protect. But it might become the case where I have to share, and you're going to have to trust me with that. Or you're going to have to get somebody else to help you. I want to help. I promise you my priorities you would agree with, but you may disagree with my application of those priorities, and I'm going to ask you to trust me. And if you can't trust me, you can't trust me. Somebody else has got to help you. So I tell them up front. To me, that gives me the latitude, so they're not going to say, I don't gossip. That's not what I do. I told Eric, because Eric already knew something, and I wanted him to know enough so that he could help and be constructive, not hurtful. And he has a right to know. He's an elder. He's a shepherd. I got a sheep with a broken leg and a gash in the chest and mortally wounded and in an ICR. It's okay if you know that.
Those of us who have had significant medical procedures understand that it's a team that works on you.
Yeah.
Nurses, PAs, multiple doctors, and it's necessary for them to chat amongst themselves for your healing, I suppose.
Yeah, and I say this to you, gentlemen, for whatever it's worth. I found early on in my ministry that there's an expectation I can't meet. So what I will try to do is say right up front what I just said. I'm an ER doctor. I do crisis care. I'm going to try to sew you up so you don't bleed out. I'm going to get you to somebody who can work on you. I may do surgery if it's the kind of surgery that I'm best to do or the one most suited to do. Surgery meaning I'll address the specific issue biblically and personally, but I can't do rehab. I can't do the doctor that's going to meet with you weekly and I can't pull it off, or I'll be in the same ICU you're in. And so I think if you say that up front, people understand that. I never want people to think I'm too busy. I just want them to know that I have limitations in what I can do and not do.
When you say that to the sheep, I'm more of the ER, the crisis physician here. How do you shepherd them? You've mentioned a little bit. How do you shepherd them to understand that I'm not the, you know, the rehab doctor? Do you talk about your giftedness or time?
Combination.
Or, okay.
Mostly it's time.
Okay.
I think. I think I'd be happy to take the long walk if I could. I'm interested. It's not that I don't care. It's not that you're not worth enough or valuable enough. I would want to walk with you. And what I also say is, and if you need me, you call me. So I'm not out of bounds just because we have a shift in the volume of times. I'm still that guy. And if you get stuck, call me and we'll work through it. So I don't know. I think that works.
Yeah, definitely.
Or I wouldn't do it.
Yeah, in Ephesians 4:12-13, yeah. There's people in the body equipped to
do the rest
equip you yeah. in different ways that maybe I'm not as freed up or available or skilled at or whatever. So, other questions? Pastor Matt. Couples working through difficult seasons together, ministry couples, when you're both suffering.
Yeah, so, 41 years about to be, there's clearly have been challenges along the way. It's not been blue sky, wind in the sails, isn't this a great vacation on the sea of life and marriage. I would say that as you encounter those challenges, whether they're health challenges, which is a good part of our story, we've had a bunch of that, to engage those as a team, to talk about them. The porch time thing I recommended to you is kind of the surface water that's always available to foster biblical, personal, spiritual life conversations that can be carried on beyond the 15 minutes somewhere else in the day. If we're not able to manage that, the two of us, despite the fact that, because sometimes I'm the problem. You know, I'm the husband who's not meeting the needs and I'm missing the point. And so it may be necessary to enlist because you recognize, hey, we're stuck. We need some help. Get the help. Don't wait until there's very little to work with. So as you're navigating, making decisions, hey, honey, we need some help. So, okay, who you're thinking? Where are we going to go? Well, obviously, that needs to be agreed upon at some level because there's trust that whoever or who are they? Can I trust them? Do they know enough? If that's a critical impasse, you find intentional solutions. You don't live with those disconnections. They'll destroy you. They'll divide you. You'll be alone, and you can't be alone. Number two, in that, you might have some of that, those couple allies. You can talk about those difficult places. Hey, it's hard. Man, I don't know what to do. She feels bad every day. I'm domesticated as much as I can be, but I don't have enough time to cover the rest, and I'm tired. So having some of those people to come alongside and talk with them. If it's, hey, we're struggling and maybe there's a book we can read together. Maybe there's something we can do intentionally and proactively to help strengthen. Maybe there's a YouTube video, a sermon that we heard about or saw or that could help us. Just a combination of seeds of truth and life and fellowship. And then listen, above all, and we've prayed this prayer. I certainly have. God, we need help. I don't have a solution. I don't have a single answer for this. And I have answers for a lot of things. But I don't have answers for this. I'm obviously coming up short. Help us. And I think God hears that prayer. And that's what I would propose as an appropriate solution. It's kind of like that desperate prayer we saw with Asa. We got lots of assets, but we don't have any assets that promise we can beat a million plus chariots. Does that help? Yes.
Mr. Neal.
You said that
Yeah, great question.
Practical ways our wives or ministry helps.
Sorry.
No, it's okay. And Neil is leads music at Cornerstone. So.
So she can carry a guitar case and print out the sheet music. So I think this would be helpful to you. It helped us. Somewhere along the way, back a distance, probably around porch time, which was a significant advance in our relationship. Just that ongoing, regular thing. And you can ask Karen yourself, you know, how important is that to you? How much do you enjoy it? Is he embellishing and overstating? Just ask her if that's valuable. But along that line, I ran into, and you might want to write this down, it's a website called Uniquely You. Uniquely You. The word unique, L-Y-U, Y-O-U, .com. I ran into this guy. He's from Birmingham. He created this test. It's not a test that you pass or fail. It's a test to help identify natural gifts, natural talents, natural strengths, personality, natural propensity, and spiritual gifts, and unite them. So he uses the DISC test. You pick whatever personality kind of profile you enjoy, but he uses DISC, so the D and the I and the S and the C. Those are natural personality propensities with certain qualities that are thematic. And you take this survey, and the survey comes back and says, based on your answers, this is what you tend to be by way of personality. Secondly, this is what you tend to evidence by way of spiritual gifting. And the union of those two things results in this kind of strength and potential weakness. So we did that as a family. We did that with our children. It's been immensely insightful and helpful. Is it the Bible? No. Is it helpful by way of profiling and understanding and you can converse out of it? Yes, it is. Now, let me tell you how that fits with your question. Learning that Karen is a discerner. I'm an optimist. I tend to believe the best until it's obvious that it's not good. She sees it and smells it sooner than I see it and smell it. I had a multiple staff, large enough church, Christian school, lots of teachers. I was the CEO by way of my position as the senior pastor. I've hired a lot of people. Some of those people I shouldn't have hired. And if I said, Karen, should I have hired them or would you hire them? She would have said no. And she would have been right and I would have been wrong. They had a good resume. They presented well. She smelled it. I didn't smell it. So what am I saying? Find out where she's strong and leverage that asset. That's what she's built to do. She's got a sniffer. Let her sniff. Karen has strengths and personality naturally. God built her that way. Leverage that. You want to unleash that. And so partnering is finding out, what's your gal's name? Annika. So you're going to find out, is it Neil? Neil, you're going to find out what Annika's built for by God. Not just for you, but how to complement you. And when you identify that and she agrees with that, then you can partner together how to unleash that. Because she's a steward of that. She's got assets she needs to deploy for the body of Christ. The spiritual gifts he distributes to everyone for the profit of all. So how is she going to be leveraged? Not just at your house, but God's house. And try to help her get there and realize her potential. So that's what I would do. I found out where Karen's strong and what she's good. She's a good discipler. She loves working with women and children. We had horses back in Alabama and a little horse farm. We had miniatures and ponies, and she had a little ministry to kids. Homeschool kids from our church come out to our farm, discipleship through horses. She's good at it, way better than Harry is at it. So it's finding that out and unleashing it. And knowing those strengths, personalities, she cares about what everybody else thinks. She's concerned about whether we should or shouldn't. I tend to go, we should do this. She tends to think about, well, if you do that, there's a ripple effect to that. She's sensitive to that. Helping me stay out of trouble when I might get in trouble, doing a good thing with unintended negative consequences. So, Neil, I would get to know her. I have recommended a website that's the guy who did it, and I'll just give you a bit of explanation, was really good. There's 16 spiritual gifts gleaned from the Bible. That's what most of us would say. The new website, and I was there recently because I do this with married couples. Anybody I marry, I get them to do it because I want to see it and help them understand it because it was so beneficial to us. Karen's a C. She's got this quality in her. A C is a thinker, a critical thinker. She's got to process it. So I can buy the car today. I can go down to the dealership, find the color and the pieces I want, and decide to buy it today. That is not that girl. And if I go home with my incredible charm and persuade her we need to buy it today, and she, because she loves her husband, goes, okay. I go back to the dealer, buy the car, bring it home, and guess who doesn't support that decision? She doesn't. And I'd say, but honey, you said you were with me. But she wasn't with me. And she wasn't with me because she didn't have time to process the decision to be with me. So it was insightful to know that a C, who's a processor, who needs information and time to think about it, is given time to think about it. So she can own it and support it. Otherwise, I knew we shouldn't have done that. I don't know why you did that. But honey, you said you were with me. That's true. That's how it can help you, so that you learn how to partner well together. And if you know she plays a position, you know how to put her in a position so that she can succeed. And if you have her out of position, you'll harm her and her and your partnership. So she's not all things to everybody. She is what she is by divine design. And my job as her husband is to help get her there and to benefit from who God made her to be. And you need tools and you need validation, and she'll validate it. Listen, spiritual gifts, just for whatever it's worth, if you're in your zone, it's like breathing. It's life-giving to you, and it's life-impacting to them. If you're in your zone where you're gifted, it's life-giving to you. This doesn't fatigue if it's where you're supposed to be. And you don't leave here going, man, I couldn't wait to get out of there. What you'll leave with is, that was helpful to me. That might be really helpful to me. And when you have her where Annika belongs, she's happy and they're happy. And you're happy. Life-giving, life-impacting. Might be life-giving to be a preacher, but if nobody's benefited by it, it's not where you're supposed to be. You meet guys like that. I got to preach. Can I teach? They teach. And nobody goes, that was a good thing. Okay.
Very helpful. Related, how would you shepherd maybe a dear mom who has a full quiver at home and feels like, you know, I'm not being useful to the Lord. I'm just changing diapers. I'm spanking, yeah, repeat, yeah, over and over. And I'm not able to use, I see these gifts that I discovered either in previous ministry before kids or on the website, but I feel useless just changing diapers all day.
So, number one, I understand that. Number two, I would say if I'm a husband of that woman, I'm reminding her, number one, this is a season. And your first calling, other than your partnership and sharing with me, is the raising and training of these children. And so this is job one or two. And whatever's going to happen at the church or somewhere else in the kingdom of God is secondary to this. We've been entrusted with these treasures, and this is what we're called to do, and this is productive, and this is successful. And it's not glamorous any more than pastoral ministry is glamorous. We change a lot of diapers too. And it's just part of understanding this is a season. And for me, and my conviction with Karen is, and I don't expect you to be at everything. And if people get upset because you didn't come to the women's thing because you were doing something you had to do at home, they'll just have to deal with it. It's not, you're not going to live or die at a church because of that, but you could live or die at home because of that. The other thing I would say as a husband is do your best to find some rhythmic relief where she can get a break, where she can recover and enjoy some of what she's built to do so that she can teach that group or that do that thing or have that outing or host that woman or host that gathering. Whatever her thing is, help facilitate it so it's not an indefinite too long season where she dries up and shrivels up. So.
Thank you. Any other questions? Got about 5 minutes left. Roland, go ahead.
How important is it for, before you go get married, to deal with her, he has his interests, she has her interests, different. She loves something, she doesn't. She loves to whatever, she doesn't. Maybe there's numerous differences. How important is it to try to persuade her or him to get together to do these things rather than he goes off on his own and she goes off on her own because she has no interest in that and you have no interest in doing what she likes?
Yeah.
How important is it for couples maybe about to get married, even those who are, to share hobbies, interests?
Buy a 30-06 for Christmas. And yeah, I'm trying to recover what I said earlier. I think two things. I think number one, there will be diversity of interest. And sometimes that's known at the beginning and sometimes that emerges over time. I did not know Karen was a horse person at all. She bleeds horsey blood. She loves it. She'll get tears in her eyes. It's been a lifelong dream, denied by her parents, but her husband is now the person to provide that opportunity. I didn't know that. I didn't read the fine print. I didn't know that. That emerged over time as the guy who loves the girl. I wanted her to share and experience that. So I tell people, she loves horses. I love her. I don't love horses. I like horses. Do you know how much work horses are? Amen, right? You know. She loves the work. For me, it's work. And so I'm the ranch hand. I'm the tractor guy. I cut grass. I fix fences. But I'll tell you what, and this is helpful to me. Hopefully it'll help you. For me, it's an act of love for her. It's not about the horses. It's about her. So my interest and her interest is out of love for her. And hopefully that's reciprocal. I like riding motorcycles. The best motorcycle ride is the one she shares with me. Sometimes that's possible, sometimes it's not. She will grant me the freedom to ride. It's therapeutic to me. Wind in my hair. She knows it is. Go, enjoy. Go take your gun and stuff and go sit in a stand and get really cold and have a great time. She loves you. She'll support that. But you need things you share together. So you need to find those things. What do you enjoy when you both do it? Find them and do them. Because those are some of the uniting, weaving soulish shared experiences. We both like the outdoors. We both like to hike. We both like that kind of thing. So we're about to have a few days of walking, talking, sharing, seeing, experiencing. It'll help us. We both love it. We were in Yosemite last year for the first time as a couple on our 40th anniversary. Loved it. Got pictures of it. Try to find those things and prioritize them because you need them. And I can't tell you what those are for you and your girl, but you need to discover those things. And maybe they're just not obvious. Experiment. Hey, let's try this. Man, that was a bummer. Let's not do that. Okay, move on. I would argue you need to prioritize sharing life and ministry, family and life. That's what I'd say. But there are going to be things that you like that she doesn't like, and you're never going to make her like them. But if she loves you, she'll find opportunities to facilitate that for you. And vice versa. Okay.
All right, maybe one more. One more quick one.
All right, get a free pass on the last one.
Looks like you might.
All right. Can I pray for everybody?
Please do. Please, would you? Thank you.
Thanks for having me. Thanks, ladies, for being a part. I rarely get to do this with the girls, and it's just better. And, you know, just.
Thank you, Harry. Thank you.
Yeah. Father, thank you for the providence that brought us together last night and today. Thank you for the opportunities we've had to talk about things that matter from the God who matters the most. And we're thankful for the record of your word and the revelation of truth that it provides so that we don't have to shoot in the dark and experiment, but we know the path to walk and the road to take. And Lord, as we conclude our time, both what we studied and the questions we just talked about, I just pray that you would imprint on our mind by your Spirit through shared conviction that we're going to make progress because of our journey together and what we've shared, that we're going to make some adjustments. We're going to talk about some things. And Lord, my prayer for these couples and these men and their families is that you would strengthen them, that you would encourage them. Some of them are in the crucible. Some of them are in difficult spaces. And more than ever, they need to be united and connected. And I pray that you would foster that kind of strength, collective strength, husband and wife, man and woman strength, so that they can experience you together and benefit from each other. Lord, I pray that, Lord, you will use these families for your glory and the good of your people. Take us from where we are and remind us that you're the good shepherd who not only shepherds your sheep, but you're the master builder who completes what you begin. Help us to be cooperative, and Lord, help us to be productive because we're seekers. Because we're meditators and we're committed to partnering and sharing for the glory of God and the blessing we desire. And that's my prayer. And I ask it for us all in Jesus' name. Amen.
Thank you, Harry.